Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
But they know I care, and so what they do is reciprocate the care back, but they do it in a way of staying out of trouble. They do it in a way of being on time, not being late. And so the relationships are really just real. I care about these young guys.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by Missouri assistant coach Cornell Mann. Coach Mann has won everywhere he's been, from the low major to mid-major to high major levels, but most importantly, is a great, great person. Anybody that knows him would agree he always has a smile on his face and a great attitude. Really one of the great guys, and has gone out of his way to help our organization, has spoken at our conferences multiple times, and we're excited to have him on the podcast. We hope you enjoy this conversation, and please follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com. Write us a review on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and please spread the word. Before we get into today's episode, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Rising Coaches Association. Since 2010, Rising Coaches has put on unbelievable events, and people would always ask us, how do we get involved with Rising Coaches? What can we do to help the cause? And to be honest, we never really had a good answer until now. Sign up today for the Rising Coaches Association and become a part of our community and our network. You will receive exclusive content and you will make genuine connections to others in the coaching profession that will help you both personally and professionally. Visit risingcoaches.com/membership and sign up today. Corn, what's up? How are you?
Absolutely wonderful. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. I know you've had a busy day with film and practice, so I appreciate you squeezing us in.
It's all love, brother.
All right, lots to talk about. You've been a lot of places in your coaching career, but the first thing that jumps off the page, you've worked at Central Michigan, Western Michigan, Oakland, and then everywhere else has still been in that Midwest region. Coincidence, or is this intentional on your part?
Well, I would consider it a blessing that I was able to keep in the Midwest, but not intentional. At first it was intentional, meaning Central Michigan, Western Michigan, University of Dayton, definitely intentional because I wanted to be closer to my kids. But after that, my kids are a little older and they understand. And so when I got the offer to come to University of Missouri, I told Coach Martin, I first had to ask my son and my daughter if it would be okay with them. And if, as long as they said it would be okay, because it takes me a little further out. And when they both said I could do it, then I accepted the job. But at first it was intentional. Then after it was a coincidence.
So where are you from, first of all? Like, what part of Michigan?
I'm from right outside Detroit. Is right off 8 Mile Road. It's called Royal Oak Township.
Okay. And I imagine on the recruiting trail, do you focus mostly on the state of Michigan, or is that where you start and then branch out from there?
Well, you always got relationships where you're from, I would think. So I do have great relationships back in Michigan. But I also got great relationships in Ohio and Chicago. And I've recruited the East Coast a little bit. I've recruited. The only place I haven't recruited is out West. Other than that, I've recruited the South. But I would say the Midwest is more my forte.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay, so you mentioned the first three stops, which is Central Michigan, Western Michigan, and Dayton. And, you know, we could talk about those places for hours probably. But since we do have a lot to get to, I want to go ahead and talk about your fourth stop, which was Iowa State, because mm-hmm. you were there with the mayor, Fred Hoiberg, and during a time where you guys had a historic run of four straight NCAA tournament appearances and a Sweet 16 appearance. Tell me a little bit about how you guys were able to have that type of success there, and and maybe a little bit about Coach Hoiberg.
Well, I think, collectively, as a staff, obviously coach, but Coach Hoiberg, but as a staff, I thought we had guys that were hungry to recruit and hungry to kind of make a name or bring about some attention to their own individual prowess in terms of recruiting and coaching. We had guys from everywhere. I mean, we had George Niang from out east. We had Monte Morris from Michigan. We had Abdul Nader, who actually was kicked off his team at Northern Illinois when we took him, and he's doing unbelievable in the NBA right now. We had Nas Long, who came all the way from Toronto, and Melvin Edgem, who was from Toronto. So we had guys from all over. We had Bryce DeJohn Jones from California. We had a couple transfers and Chris Allen from Michigan State, Corey Lucius from Michigan State, Will Clyburn from University of Utah, and junior college transfers. And so the one thing I'll tell you about the teams we had a great mix of young guys, Matt Thomas, who's with Toronto Raptors. We had a great mix of very good young talent. This is after the first year, because the first year was my first year was Fred's second year. And so we had a great mix of talent after the first year. My first year there, we had Royce White, Chris Allen, and those guys, and Melvin Edgem. And that team was exceptional, and it kind of evolved into a great team. But then after you get Monte Morris, George Niang, Matt Thomas, Nas Long all at the same time, four guys that's playing at the highest level right now, and four guys who came in who also had to look to make a name for themselves. Matt Thomas had a great name. He was highly ranked, highly talented. George Niang was, some people said he was like the beer truck driver just because of the way he was built. He really worked his body and his game to get to make it as efficient as possible today. Nas was not a great player coming in, but Nas was the best leader I ever been around. And so all of those guys really did a great job of working to become great players. And so the thing that we had at Iowa State, I thought, and it was created, the thing we had was a great culture of getting better. We had guys who needed and wanted to prove something. And we also had coaches who needed and wanted to prove something. And we were able to do it. I mean, including Fred. Fred was the first-time head coach. He needed and wanted to prove some things as well. And so we had a very hungry group of coaches and a hungry group of players. And it made things to be for Iowa State University the best 4 years in the history of basketball at that particular university.
Yeah, and you mentioned it in your explanation there. I mean, you talked primarily about the players that you guys had there. But also, I would say, from an outsider's perspective, Fred Hoiberg is known as a player's coach. And, how much of that played in? Because before you guys got there, I mean, Iowa State was – winning on average around 15 games a season for the previous, 10 seasons or so. So how much of that, player-led culture and players' coach atmosphere did Coach Hoiberg create? And how do you – because that's kind of a fine line, right? How do you create that with being so hands-off that you're not involved in molding that culture?
Well, at the end of the day, I think what Fred was able to do, and this is, when he told me this, I was like, man, it sounds good, but will it work? When he first told me, he said, "Corn, I love to give players confidence," and so he is a player's coach, and he said, "I'll make these guys feel like they're Superman." And at first, I'm like, man, get out of here. But in reality, that's what he did and that's what he does. He really, really pumps guys up. He's not one that'll say, don't take that shot. That was a bad shot. Or don't do this or don't do that. He don't like confrontation, especially on the court. And so he was able to allow guys to evolve into great players. And I think that's more of what it was and probably what it is for him now, being at the University of Nebraska. My guess, I hadn't been out there. I talked to Fred some, but I hadn't been out there. And I think that's just who he is. And so, in short, like you said, he's a player's coach, and he was able to get those guys feeling like Superman. I mean, those dudes felt like Superman. And the workout culture, I think, came when I think I brought a large part of that. And the reason I say that is because Fred was only a head coach for 1 year, and he was still filling out the college game. And I had been coaching for a long time, and I just came from the University of Dayton, where the culture there was one that you know, you had to work out, work. And at Iowa State, I think I brought a bit of that with me. But the players, it was not like you had to force them to work out. You just had to give them what to do, and they took it over, and they did what they did. I mean, on a daily basis, the one thing we did when I first got there, we took, because you can't work guys out in the summer. At this time, you couldn't really, you didn't have much time. I don't even remember at that time if you had 2 hours or 4 hours a week or whatever. But what we did was, in the practice gym, we took a workout sheet. And so if you wanted to work out, we had a sheet under each basket where you can go and pull your workout from the sheet. And so it would be, at the top, it would be ball handling, then live ball moves, then post moves. Obviously, it's post players and guards that post. And so you could just pull from the sheet what you would like to do in terms of a workout. And then you got managers, obviously, or a teammate that can help you get your workout done. And so that was the beginning of it. And dudes just did it. I mean, they did it. They came in every day. It got to the point where guys would, you would have to sit on the side and wait till someone would finish to get your workout in.
So guys were just living in the gym. And is that something that, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Dayton, who you worked for, Brian Gregory at the time, who had a ton of success, and you guys won a ton of games during your tenure there. It was the same workout culture, but from what I understand, again, as an outsider, it's a little more forced, and no right or wrong way to skin a cat. Both coaches have had a ton of success, but I mean, under Brian Gregory, like, you are going to work, correct?
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I think, you know, BG is a, no doubt, a blue-collar coach and a blue-collar guy. And so he believed in rolling up the sleeves and working. And so that's what we did. I don't know if it was the difference in the head coach as much as it was the attitude of the players.
Gotcha. So let me go back to this in terms of building confidence, making guys feel like they're Superman. How do you balance that, and then also pair that, like, maybe you're in a game, somebody misses a blockout, a defensive assignment? I mean, how are you handling those situations? I mean, are you just putting it off till the next day in the film room, or how do you build confidence while correcting in the heat of the moment?
Well, at that time, I was a defensive guy, so I built the defense from ground up. And so, Fred, if you had an area, so like Matt Abdumassi, his area was more in recruiting. If you had an area, he would give you leeway to do your job. And so if it's during the game, then if it need to be a sub because somebody missed an assignment, then I'll tell Fred and Fred will pull him. I mean, it was as simple as that. He trusted his assistant coaches to do their job, and that's what we've done. And the players realized, you know, if you're coming out the game because you missed the assignment, you probably already know that that I asked Fred to take you out of the game. And, of course, he, I mean, it's at his discretion. He's the head coach. So it was times he would say, leave him in, let him get a good vibe, and then I'll take him out. And so a lot of times he didn't want to take guys out, especially for offensive more than defensive, but he didn't want to take guys out after they made a mistake, especially offensively. Defensively, we didn't compromise as much, but offensively, if you took a bad shot or you didn't make an extra pass or you didn't feed the ball when it should have been fed, he's not going to take you out right away for that. He won't allow you to play through it and then take you out so you don't feel like you was poured for something you did or didn't do offensively.
Got it. Okay. There's times in coaching, like if you coach long enough, you're at some point going to be a part of a team that underperforms or whatever, and your staff gets fired and you find yourself out of a job. But then there's also these weird times where you do such a great job that your head coach goes on and takes another opportunity and you find yourself out of a job. And mm-hmm. Is that kind of what happened to you at Iowa State?
Well, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, Fred had a great opportunity to take a job with the Chicago Bulls. And, as an assistant coach, you can trick yourself a lot of times. So at one point or when he said he was going to do that, we had so much success and I was a top assistant, I really felt like I would have gotten a shot to be the head coach there. But obviously, hey, I'm not the athletic director. And Jamie Pollard, who is a great athletic director, chose to move in a different direction. So you understand from my standpoint and probably from Fred's, I'm a college guy at first. I got in the business to really help young men and to help grow young men, mind, body, soul. And so it was a lot of times during the time I was with Fred that Fred would hear me say, well, I'm not a pro guy. And I really wasn't. Now, after he had taken that job, you think, man, well, he heard me say that, so he probably feel like, you know, Corn's not a pro guy, so let me get my guys. Plus, you know, going to the NBA, you don't have as much autonomy as you would want, depending on the situation. So he couldn't take everybody with him. He took a couple guys with him, and that was fine because, again, I wasn't considered, even by my own definition, a pro guy, which I changed since I did a mini camp with the Clippers, and that really turned me on to the NBA game. I hadn't had any experience with it until then, and so I would love to be an NBA coach one day, but not right now. And so when Fred took the job, he took a couple guys with him. Then Jamie Pollard, who has a right to be the athletic director and do his thing, which he did. And so at some point, Steve Prohm, who's a good friend of mine now, Steve Prohm said, I'm not going to retain you, all right? Which is fine. At that year, I was still getting paid through contract, which was a blessing. And I did have people offer me jobs right away. But like I told you about my kids, this is an opportunity for me to go spend more time with my kids. So I was able to do that. And then I was also able to, I had two universities call me and ask me to evaluate their program all year long. One was a high major university, one was a mid major university, and they paid me to do so. And I would have did it for free, but they paid me to do so. And, you know, what it does is it gives you a unique perspective, of being on the outside looking in. It gives you a unique perspective of grading and evaluating practices in terms of what I've experienced versus what I'm watching. And after it was all over, you know, I go to games. They fly me out for games here and there. Not a lot of them, but fly me out for games here and there. I go and visit and watch practice for 2-3 days in a row. And that was good. The other thing I did was I was able to go over to China, and Bain Bethea got a group that he takes over to China 2-3 or 4 times a year. And we took a group over to play. We took a group of professionals over to play against the Chinese Olympic team to get them prepared for the Asian Games. So that experience was awesome. And then I jumped planes and drove to watch games, both NBA games and college games and high school games and AAU games throughout the year. And to be honest with you, that was really fun, you know, because again, you kind of get an inside look at what's going on, because, you know, I coached AAU 25 years ago. And so you get an inside look of the AAU teams, what these guys talk about behind closed doors, how things is kind of working on a ground level. So it really was a unique, but also an awesome experience.
Did you have the itch the whole time to get back, or were you able to enjoy it?
You know what? The first, probably the first 6 weeks was rough. And the reason I say it was rough is because you hadn't been freed up, you know, that much. You didn't have that much free time. And, you know, you're still kind of holding on to the thought of maybe you're going to get a scout job in the NBA? Will another team that I really would like to work for call me? But after about the 6 week mark, I really settled into the fact that I'm gonna spend some time with my kids and I'm gonna run around and help these programs and also you know, get near and dear to some high school players and programs and you know, build some new relationships with some colleges and universities.
You mentioned how that gave you kind of a new perspective and behind the scenes look, observing practices during that year. And so I want to jump topics a little bit. I imagine you got that same new perspective to recruiting because your son recently committed to play football at Purdue. Is that right? So
yeah, he's going to play football and basketball.
Oh, both. Awesome. Awesome. What did you learn anything from being on the other end of that recruiting experience?
No, I don't think so. I did learn something. Obviously myself and Malik's mom are not together. So, you know, some programs will recruit the entire situation and some programs will try and pick and choose who to recruit in terms of parents, coaches, AAU coaches versus high school coaches, mom versus dad. And so you get a feel for some of that. My son is a very mature young man. He knows what he wants. And so he headlined his own recruiting situation. I mean, he went on a lot of visits, unofficial. He went a lot of visits for basketball. He went on a lot of visits for football. For a long time, he wanted to, you know, he settled into being a player that was going to go to the University of Missouri. And then some things transpired, and he said, you know, Dad, I don't want to do that. I'd like to take a look at these schools. And so when he did that, then, you know, his family, his entire family, his mom, his dad, obviously, but also, he got other people, coaches and that, who helped sift through a couple of things. But ultimately, Malik did a great job of finding a fit for himself, finding a group of people who he is comfortable with, finding a place that's up and coming, because he was recruited by just about everybody. But I think he found comfort at Purdue, and he found a situation at Purdue that he could play both, and ultimately came down to Georgia and Purdue, and Purdue probably was they did a great job. Football did a great job of having a great relationship with them, and then basketball, I have a great relationship with those guys, which really helps. And so it just kind of worked out. But that was more he, meaning Malik, than anything else. And, you know, a lot of kids are not mature enough to make a great decision, but I was fortunate and blessed, and his mom is fortunate and blessed enough to have a kid that knows what he wants, knows what he's looking for.
That's great. So you get to just sit back and kind of enjoy the ride.
Exactly. And then, you know, you go places and you kind of give him, okay, here's my thought. And he'll take your thoughts in consideration. And it was one school who he cut out because, you know, after it was over, they said some things to him that did not fit the description of the school he was looking for. And it was good. It was proper. It was the right way to attack the situation. And again, I thought he did an unbelievable job of finding a great situation for himself.
That's great. Well, we wish him the best. All right, let's get back to your coaching journey. So after your year out, so to speak, you get a job at Oakland with Greg Campy, who is one of the most underrated coaches out there and one of the great offensive minds. What was that season at Oakland like for you?
Well, Coach Campy is a great guy. He is an unbelievable guy. I really enjoyed working for him for the year. And I've been knowing Campy forever. I mean, I've known Campy since I probably was 10, 11 years old, because a very good friend of mine who was more like a family member went and played for him when it was Division II. And of course, being in the business, I've known Campy for a long time. It was good. It was good because, you know, Campy is, he let his players play. That's the one thing that, you know, you said a great offensive mind. That's the great part of his offensive mind. He let his players play. And there's a lot to be said for that you got enough comfort and enough confidence in yourself as the head coach to just allow them to go out and do their thing. Defensively, myself and Coach Hipscher, Dan Hipscher was on his staff, and Valentine was on his staff too, who had played for Hipscher. He's at Loyola now. And so we had a really good staff, good guys. And at one point, can't be a get a laugh out of this, but at one point, people were saying it's the best defense Campy ever had. And Campy was on myself and Coach Hipscher's tail about it, you know, kind of joshing us a little bit, you know, about, oh, they said this is the best defense I've ever had. And then he'd say, wait till we lose a game. It's going to be all on me. You know what I mean? But it was really cool working for him. And we were able to win the conference regular season and go and play at Clemson in the NIT, where our best player, Jalen Hayes, went down in the first half. We were down either 17 or 19 at Clemson. And in the second half, we came back to win that game, which was awesome. Credit to the players. And then we went over to play at Richmond, and we ended up losing a tight game, but a very competitive game at Richmond. So it was a great year. It was a great year, and I really enjoyed it. I think my family enjoyed it because I was so close to home. And so it was awesome. I mean, I really enjoyed my year at Oakland.
So you guys have that great season at Oakland, and that's when, and we talked about this earlier, Coach Martin over at Missouri calls, and you make the transition over to Mizzou. And, you know, a lot of similarities. Again, you hear so much about Zoe being, you know, a great players coach. I'm sure there's similarities between him and Coach Hoiberg, but I'm sure they have their own ways of doing it too. So tell me a little bit about Coach Martin's style and what makes him unique.
Well, the first thing I'd say about Coach Martin is he's an unbelievable coach. Been took three different teams in the NCAA tournament. And the one thing about him that you know, it's hard because it's college basketball, but the one thing that I would never want to get lost in translation is how much this man cared for young people and how much he shared himself and share his ideas and time with people throughout the country. He's well respected, obviously, and well liked, but he's a guy that really gives to the basketball community in terms of coaches, in terms of committees. He really shares himself, and that right there is very important and hard to. I don't ever want that to be missed, and so that's the first thing. The other thing about Coach is, you know, he got it. Like he got it. Meaning, like if I was sick, and the other two assistants was on the road recruiting, he's very comfortable with running it. The whole thing. Whether I've seen this man sweep floors, I've seen him clean the locker room, top to bottom. He has a hand in on every part of his program, which he should, and he is an unbelievable leader both on and off the court. In terms of, I would say, his coaching style is very, very aggressive. Especially defensively, no toleration for lack of energy and effort on the wood, and offensively, he really likes to change. He likes to look at things and see what we need, because obviously, he does a great job of figuring out what our personnel is versus what we run. Some people just take players and just throw them together, and you're going to run what you're going to run regardless. And he don't do that. What he does is he takes a hard look at our personnel and then makes sure that everything, obviously defensively, but everything offensively fits our personnel. And in terms of confidence, man, shoot your shot. I mean, shoot your shot. He's not holding anybody up from scoring the ball. But If it is an extra pass or one more situation where you can throw one more pass, he'll alert you to that without telling you that you took a bad shot. He ain't going to tell you that. What he'll tell you is you could have taken care of the possession better, and or you had one more pass you could have made to an open shot. And so I think Coach Martin's his style, I would say, is his own. I don't think anybody is like him, not anybody I worked for. Is like him, because Fred was very offensive. Coach Martin is very defensive. And so, but they both are players' coaches. I think our players love Coach Martin. And the guys that leave love him more, because once you get out in the real world, you realize what this man was trying to feed you.
What, you've kind of hung your hat on your relationships with players. How do you kind of establish those relationships? How do you build them? And, you know, what makes you so gifted in that area?
Well, I started humble beginnings. I mean, I grew up grew up in the projects, grew up very poor. And I would look around where I grew up and say, man, I wish I could help that person. I wish I could help that person. And really, I mean, I could look in the mirror and say, I wish I could help myself, because we were in some situations where it was just tough. And so in my life, I always wanted to help people. And so I started to help people at a young age. Now, in terms of building relationships, man, this is all real. I take it very personal and obviously serious when I go and tell a kid and or his parents and his coaches that I'm a lookout for this kid, that I'm going to make sure this kid is in the gym working, but also that I'm not going to allow anything to happen with the kid. So if a kid is in our program, especially if I recruited him, then 9 times out of 10, you're not going to see any trouble from him, because they're going to be so terrified that Corn going to do something to them that they won't, you know, get caught up. But they know I care. And so what they do is reciprocate they care back, but they do it in a way of staying out of trouble. They do it in a way of being on time, not being late. And so the relationships are really just real. I care about these young guys. I'm not in this business to, you know, my legacy is my legacy. Once I'm finished, my legacy will be the fact that I really cared and I gave all I could for these young people. That'll be it. I don't need anybody to create a statue or, you know, pay me a certain amount of money or anything like that. I just really want to help young people out. And basketball is the venue that God has blessed me to be able to do so. With that being said, I'm a bad loser. And I think that's translated even when I'm coaching or when I'm involved in terms of a relationship with a player. It's translated that I don't want to be part of nothing losing. And you got to do things the right way. More than losing or winning, you have to do things the right way. And I was told by Jamie Pollard before I left that every time he met with a kid, because he meets with guys like an exit interview, all of the players that ever left Iowa State while I was there told him the same thing. Coach Korn cares. And he cared more about basketball. He kept it real with me. And we talked about way more than basketball. We talked a lot about life. And if that is what people continue to say about me, I'd be super happy.
Yeah, that's great stuff, Korn. Well, I can assure you they say it about you all over. And I can tell you I appreciate, because you're one of the few guys who have come back and spoken at the Rising Coaches Conference multiple times. We've only had a couple repeat presenters, and you are one of them. So that's just one small way that you've showed that you've cared about us and our organization and giving back to the profession. So just wanted to say thank you for always being willing to help with our mission.
Oh, it's all good. All good.
Well, Korn, I appreciate it. I know you guys are headed back. I think you guys play tomorrow, so we won't keep you. But thank you so much for making time, and good luck.
It's all good. I appreciate you, and we'll talk again soon.